Maybe we could start with your background, how you got there, and your time there briefly, then go from there.
I was brought in as the head of financial reporting, specializing in the context of the IPO. Essentially, I wrote the financial statements for the first interim and annual report and helped them navigate the increased audit scrutiny that a public listing entails. My role involved upskilling their finance team and designing their annual reporting process. I handled the organic accounts. They spent a lot on financial reporting and accounting advice, particularly with PwC. You might have seen the transaction costs in the acquisition, around 15 million pounds shared with the foundation. Much of that was spent on accounting advice. They decided to bring someone in as they transitioned from a private to a public company. I worked directly for the CFO and was part of the finance team. They're based in Cambridge. Not many people leave. They quote a retention rate of about 90%, though it's not quite that high due to some retail factors, but it's essentially that high. The company has about 150 people. Approximately 75 of those are engineers. The remaining 75 are divided among the executive team, the finance team, and the sales team. These numbers are always in flux, but essentially, it's about 50% engineers, 25% finance, and 25% sales. In addition to finance and commercial roles, there's also some administrative support and other necessary functions within the company.
Can you tell us how things were when you arrived and what changed during your tenure?
You can see the changes by comparing the annual report before and after the IPO. We focused on upskilling the accounting policies and spent a lot of time working on the audit committee with the risk register. We aimed to enhance their compliance. The core underlying business didn't change significantly during my time there because the main focus was on the IPO. So there weren't massive changes to the actual business. There was a lot of activity around the listing.
In your view, what was the process like to build or upskill the financial reporting capability at Raspberry Pi when you were there?
They hired me because of my experience with KPMG in upskilling finance teams and managing business changes from private to listed companies. They were also heavily supported by PwC. One of my roles was to reduce the PwC fees and lessen their reliance on PwC, which they used for tax purposes. Tax is a significant part of the finance team's responsibilities due to the R&D tax rebates. While I was there, we secured 2 million pounds back from HMRC as part of the R&D tax credit. The finance team, consisting of about 10 to 12 people, grew out of the offshoot of charity and was very focused on transactional processes. They ensured sales were recorded correctly, purchases were authorized, and money was collected from debtors. All of that was handled well, with one person responsible for each function. However, they lacked technical accounting and PLC reporting accounting policies, which left them exposed when they listed. This could have led to investigations by regulators like the FRC. In the US, you'd have the SEC conducting investigations. There were no issues, but some of their processes would have been hard to explain. There was no issue with their intentions. They tried to do things properly. However, they lacked the expertise for some of the reporting. Essentially, what would happen is it would cost them a lot of money to get through these regular audits. In the UK, the regulation mandates that every listed company is audited once every 3 years on a rotation. However, it's not exactly every 3 years. They are guaranteed to have one in 5 years. It's surprising they haven't had one already, but when they do, it will be costly for them. They need to be able to explain things to the regulator. The way they operate their supply chain is complicated, so ensuring accounting compliance is crucial. It's about upskilling that area. In terms of core fundamentals, they're very good at that and have people responsible for it. They're a small company, so if someone is unavailable, they need to replace them quickly. Being a computer company, they only require employees to be in the office 3 days a week, with the option to work from home. Coming out of COVID, nobody gets sick, and they pay their staff well, which helps retain employees. The company is very much led by the CEO, Eben Upton, and the engineers love him. I previously worked for a pharmaceutical company dealing with asthma medication, and the staff here have a deeper pride in the company. Even though they're essentially selling computers, the level of investment from the employees is something I've never seen before. One reason for this is that they receive good stock options as well.
Could you elaborate? Perhaps share a story or example that illustrates what you said about Eben Upton's leadership and the employees' happiness and investment in the company's vision. I'd love to hear more about that.
It's purely anecdotal, but I went to the engineers' drinks because they're based in Cambridge. and I lived in London. I was staying in a hotel 3 nights a week. They have engineers' drinks every Wednesday. There are only about 75 engineers, so around 30 or 40 of them show up. I attended because I was staying in the hotel, and I met a lot of computer enthusiasts. None of them had a bad word to say about him. They all mentioned how he allows people to do their jobs, knows what's going on, attends meetings, but also lets people handle their tasks. There are two anecdotal points. First, attending the engineers' drinks and lunches. I never heard anything negative about him. Secondly, during the first financial report as a listed company, I needed information from directors and team heads for various disclosures. He would always respond to an email within 10 minutes, unlike anyone else. This suggests he delegates properly and is aware of what's happening. He's a very impressive leader. And you can tell because nobody complains or leaves.
That's exactly the kind of anecdotal information we need. We're piecing things together from many different impressions, so this is great.
He came from Broadcom, which is where he worked when he was younger. Broadcom is a crucial supplier of one of the memory chips. So his relationship with Broadcom is quite key. If he left the company, I'm not sure there would be a company. That's a bit dramatic, but he is fundamental to what's going on. It's his relationships and the way he's built it. At those drinks, some suppliers in different companies, including Broadcom, were present, and they all had good things to say about him.
Can you explain what makes his relationship with Broadcom so important? I don't really understand what it is about that relationship that makes it so significant. Presumably, without Eben, they would still be a good customer. What is it about that relationship with Broadcom that's so Eben-centric?
They're not a customer. They're a supplier.
I mean, Raspberry Pi would be a good customer.
He has fundamental, long-standing relationships in the computer world with that company. Many of the staff have come from Broadcom, as did he himself. So it's spun out. There are some contracts with Broadcom. Honestly, I don't know the full details. I'll be completely honest. I don't know. But there's a long-standing history and legacy. He's just part of that ecosystem.
Is the ecosystem sort of like a small world, would you say? Like everyone knows everyone?
At that level, yes. Cambridge Science Park is like the Silicon Valley of the UK, right? Not quite the same scale, clearly. But, you know, we had Microsoft opposite, Broadcom was nearby. I don't know exactly where they were, but they go to lunch together occasionally. It is an ecosystem, and they are sort of connected.
Related to the ecosystem and the engineers you talked with, if there was a sense of what types of individuals were at Raspberry Pi, what kind of people does Raspberry Pi attract? Who flourishes at Raspberry Pi and who doesn't? Did any of that come through?
Raspberry Pi is known for having a few unique cultures. They have a flat structure. Essentially, you have Eben, the CEO, CFO, and then the heads of hardware, software, and sales. Everyone below them is more or less at the same level. The finance team is a bit different, with a few more junior people helping. They have an unusual culture. Not strange in a bad way, but unusual. They don't have meetings or secretaries, which is quite unique. The sales team does, but I was trying to make the finance team have some more, but they won't. Their whole culture and ethos are based on being a small, growing company. They are definitely paid above average, but you need to pitch in. You're not going to have a secretary doing your photocopying. You need to do that yourself. Likewise, you're not going to have someone clogging up your day with meetings. You'll be standing around people's desks, working things out collaboratively. They're small enough to do that. Again, this isn't meant to be a bad thing, but the engineers are basically known as slightly autistic.
Not bad at all. Not bad at all.
Some of the office clothing was quite casual, almost as if they were dressed for the beach. However, everything is designed to help them focus on their tasks. In terms of office politics, there really isn't any. If you need help, people assist you without asking questions. You are actively discouraged from scheduling meetings in people's diaries because it distracts them from their work. Coming from a corporate London environment, I found this very strange. I was used to having my whole day filled with meetings, but here, I only had about 2 meetings a week, which was really odd. They also don't send a lot of emails. It's all about collaboration and working together. Their office moved to a really nice new facility. Essentially, all the engineers are on one floor, and everyone else is on another floor. The bottom floor is for meetings with external people. There are many collaborative areas and working spaces where people are always talking or chatting. It's definitely like a small family. It may not sound like much, but it's quite unusual and noticeable.
I love that description. That's super helpful. One of the things you mentioned is the organizational structure at Raspberry Pi. I'd be curious if you could discuss whether there was anyone else within the organization who was crucial in the same way, or to a greater or lesser degree, than Eben Upton.
No, Eben is the CEO, but he's really the CTO as well. He's the chief technical officer, although I don't think he's officially called that. In my opinion, he spends about half his time as CEO and half as CTO. Below him, you have James Adams and Gordon Hollingworth. James Adams is responsible for hardware, and Gordon Hollingworth is responsible for software. They lead the engineers, whether in hardware or software. It's a very flat structure. And while I knew many of them, I didn't really know their specific roles on a micro level. Let me check the Raspberry Pi leadership. I spent a lot of time with one guy in the hotel. This guy is fundamental.
Ian Newton? He was on one of our calls, and you can see online that he is a senior IPO advisor to the board.
Yes, he was basically the corporate finance guy. It was Mike Buffum. He's the chief commercial officer. He was previously with Farnell, which is one of the biggest customers. He is the head of everything that's not related to the development of software or hardware. So he's not a computer guy, but he's running the supply chain, the sales team, and marketing. Essentially, he handles the operations of the company. Eben is the CEO and visionary for new products. Below him, you have his right-hand man on hardware, James Adams, and his right-hand man on software, Gordon Hollingworth. They are developing new hardware, software, and products, and they're responsible for the product pipeline for what's coming. The key thing is the Pi 6, which I think is due to launch next year or the year after. I'm not entirely sure when, but I think it's the end of next year or the beginning of the year after, within about 15 months, whenever that actually falls. That's the big new product launch they're focused on, ensuring the reliability testing and making sure the product is as good as it can be. Mike is focused on selling the products that are already on the market. He's managing the supply chain. They have a single source manufacturer with Sony, based in Wales. They need to get the correct orders into Sony. Some of the parts are sold to Sony, who then assembles them, and then we sell to the customers. The products don't ever come to us. They go directly from Sony to the customer.
Can I ask you about the dynamic between Eben, James Adams, and Gordon Hollingworth? What are those relationships like? Who plays what role, and how do they make decisions?
This is all based on my observations and is my opinion, obviously. Eben and James went to university together 2 decades ago, and James was an original member of the group. My understanding, which might not be completely correct, is that Eben has the vision and is very technical, but James actually designed the original Raspberry Pi with Eben. He is like the Steve Jobs of the operation in a way. Gordon, I don't know when he joined, and he's focused on software, not hardware. But they go way back. They completely manage their own teams. Eben does not manage the teams, they manage the team. All of the hardware reports to James, all of the software reports to Gordon. But Eben makes all of the decisions. They work basically in a bank of desks in a corner, with James and Gordon sitting next to each other and Eben about 5 meters away. So my understanding of what is going on is that James and Gordon are in control of everything. But Eben is setting the vision and making the decisions. They've worked together for decades.
Do they get into disagreements about things?
They must do, not that I saw.
I'm just curious about how that works. Does Eben steamroll everyone? Or is there a healthy debate and they come to a consensus? Do you have any sense of what happens between those two extremes?
If Eben makes a decision, it's going to be the decision. But James and Gordon are very strong. They work together and have worked collaboratively for years. There was absolutely no sense of any fallout, disagreements, arguing, or tension. It seemed really relaxed, focused. They're good people, and they work well together. There must be disagreements.
I think I have a sense of what you're saying.
In my earlier career, someone once said to me, "You can tell the inefficiency in an organization by the size of the office of the top people. When they've got massive offices, it's very inefficient. These people have open desks. They have their little corner of the exec leadership team corner. But they are working collaboratively. There's no arguments. If there's a problem, they're talking it through. James and Gordon are strong, so while I definitely think Eben makes decisions, I don't think he's going to disagree with James if James says something's not working."
Can I ask about the process of setting the strategy that was conveyed in the IPO prospectus and to the market during the IPO process? Did you have any exposure to how they formulated that and where it came from? Was the strategy we know today envisioned years ago? Or was it more of a reaction like, oh my gosh, we have to say something to the market. What do we say?
There was a lot of framing with advisors around the risks of that strategy. Initially, Raspberry Pi's mission was to address the lack of skills in coding and computer use, especially in education. When I was in school, computing was considered a joke subject, but now those skills are in demand.
Me too. It's never too late for us.
The key focus now is on building out the commercial application of Raspberry Pi hardware. Their competitive advantage is that for single-use applications, like a McDonald's menu or a departure terminal at an airport, you can use a Raspberry Pi without paying ongoing Microsoft licenses. This is valuable for business applications, leading to worldwide growth, especially in South America. Businesses are buying Raspberry Pis for installations like Heathrow terminals, avoiding Microsoft license costs. For single-use computers, Raspberry Pi is ideal. However, for multiple tasks, a Microsoft system might be better. The strategy is to expand awareness of this advantage. Raspberry Pi is often used in the prototype stage of new computer systems, but companies tend to choose IBM or Microsoft for rollout due to perceived robustness and security. The goal is to transition Raspberry Pi from a learning tool to a business tool, with AI as a potential growth area. They had some setbacks with smart home applications, but the focus remains on leveraging AI for real applications. There will be a boom in the next few years, and they could be positioned to have a Raspberry Pi in every fridge, for example. That's where they're trying to get to. Their vision and the spin-off from the foundation was an attempt to achieve all that. They had lawyers and advisors, and they spent £15 million. Clearly, there were people helping them write this strategy. A lot of it was marketing. However, what I described is what they're trying to do. And to some extent, the advisors don't understand computers. So they can't just write a load of...
Right.
They spent a lot of money framing it and discussing it. Ian is very involved in the strategy and writing it. Ian is the person to talk to about the strategy.
Honestly, your explanation about single-use versus multi-use and how it's cheaper without recurring costs is better articulated than what the brainiacs at Raspberry Pi often say. They overcomplicate it. That was really well put.
I spent 6 months trying to understand what they did because we're a computer company, and everyone in the office uses Microsoft computers. I didn't understand what was going on, and it took me ages. Essentially, it's about not having to pay recurring costs. Imagine if you're Heathrow, and every screen is a computer. Paying a Microsoft license for every terminal and departure gate would massively add up. Instead, you buy something for $50 or $100, and that's your only cost.
Do you feel that Eben, James, Gordon, or the people inside Raspberry Pi felt extremely confident, moderately confident, or uncertain about their vision? How did they act?
They are passionately trying to push forward because they believe they have a product that is cheaper for corporates. Their growth and focus are on corporates, not hobbyists or education. Although hobbyists and education still account for about 25% of their business, that's not where the future revenue lies. They are targeting corporates and are confident in that direction. They hired a significant sales team in 2020. Previously, they didn't have a sales team, but then they employed about 20 people. They have people based on the East Coast and West Coast of America, just one person in each place, and then in Europe. They are confident in that strategy. The real pinch point for the company is the success of the launch of the Pi 6. I don't really know how the market will react. There are essentially three key groups of people, as far as I understand. You've got the hobbyists, the people who blog and talk about computers all the time and post YouTube videos. If the Raspberry Pi launches and those people say, oh, this is great, it will create traction. That's very important. It's about how those influencers react to the new product. If they say it's not good, it will obviously hurt. Then there's the corporate application of those products, which goes hand in hand. A lot depends on how the Pi 6 is perceived. They've done Pi 1 through Pi 5. Pi 5 was successful, but not as successful as planned, as I understand. They've invested a lot in the Pi 6. A lot of the IPO investment and funds are tied to the Pi 6, which is quite crucial. They are obviously going to be very bullish, but I don't know their true thoughts.
So it's really a big bet business model, where you invest heavily for a few years and then find out the outcome. Is that accurate?
Yes, it's like a shorter version of a pharmaceutical model. The hardware and software teams are not involved in sales or operations. They focus on developing the pipeline and investment. You can see on their financial statements that the capitalized intangibles represent all the money they're spending on the pipeline, and it's about whether they will recover that investment. It's been successful, and they've gained traction so far. They have customers locked in and established relationships, which is why the relationships that Eben has are important. They are actively selling. I think they've sold, let me remember, 65 million units. People have bought the PlayStation 1, 2, and 3, and they're going to buy the PlayStation 4 when it comes out. They have a loyal customer base. It's not a blind bet. They have market presence and are part of the ecosystem. However, if they launch the product and it's not good, that won't be beneficial for them, will it?
You mentioned it took you about 6 months to understand what the business actually was. One thing I noticed from this call is that it's enjoyable to talk with another finance person about Raspberry Pi, because it's challenging to grasp some of the more technical descriptions. During that 6 month process of getting up to speed, did you have any moments of insight where you thought, okay, this is really what the business is? You've described one or two of them so far, but anything else around that could be interesting and fun to hear about?
No, I mean, it was, as I mentioned before, a single source. I couldn't understand why companies were buying these. What puzzled me for ages was why this was a problem. The issue I had was trying to understand why companies wouldn't just buy Microsoft. It's because they are not selling to people who don't understand computers. To use a Raspberry Pi, you need to be able to wire things in code. You basically need to be a computer enthusiast. This does limit the market, but it also doesn't. It limits the market in the sense that we're not selling like Bill Gates selling Microsoft into every home. We're not targeting home PC users. We're selling to people who go into YouTube videos and talk about things I don't even understand. They're like, oh, this is so cool. I've done this, and I can do this. People go on holiday and use Raspberry Pis to water their plants, and they code that all up. However, where it is important is that all the chief technology officers and IT people in big companies know how to do this stuff. They've trained on Raspberry Pis, and it's about getting them to use it in bigger applications of IT and corporations. So they are selling to computer enthusiasts. But there are a lot of computer enthusiasts, and computers are important in big companies. If your market is limited to enthusiasts, these enthusiasts work in companies like Vodafone, Microsoft, McDonald's, Heathrow Airport, etc. That's their market. So it's B2B, basically, not B2C. Also, it was about the competitive advantage you mentioned, avoiding licenses and ongoing costs. You're selling them a box they can wire up for single-use applications or computers. If single-use applications of computers grow, I'm sure Raspberry Pi will be very successful. What that actually means, I'm not entirely sure. I know it means things like train screens, but in the context of AI, I don't understand. But that's what they're aiming for.
Who is talking about AI inside the company?
So, there was something really important. You've been following the share price and everything. The share price peaked and went crazy around this time last year after an announcement about an AI collaboration. That's all I know. I'd have to look it up.
What I mean is, was there someone like an Eben, a James, a Gordon, or anyone else who was a champion of AI? Did they start talking about it? Or did that come from the bankers? I'm just wondering because they have collaborations with Halo and such.
No, I think they're just passionate about running the company, making the computer successful, and increasing sales. Obviously, AI is a significant factor in the computer world. I understand it's James, and I think it's a combination of software and hardware. They experienced a significant increase in sales during the Ukraine war because people were using Raspberry Pi and drones. So, in any situation where you want a computer to perform a single task, like in a board or a drone, Raspberry Pi is better suited for that than Microsoft, Dell, or HP. The AI aspect presents opportunities for this. The one application I was aware of was smart fridges and the boom of smart home applications, where Raspberry Pi could be well positioned. My understanding, although I'm not entirely sure, is that the Raspberry Pi 6 would be better suited for that kind of space. The challenge with computers is that you develop something like the Raspberry Pi 5, and in 3 years it's completely outdated. You have to keep updating your technology. As AI becomes more important in the computer space, it will be increasingly important for Raspberry Pi.
This question might be more opinion-based, and it's okay if nothing comes up for you. Everyone has their strengths and areas for improvement. In your opinion, what areas could Eben and the management team improve on?
As the company grows, they need to adapt. The larger the company becomes, the more they'll have to move away from the idea that everyone is paid well and everyone handles everything. They'll need to introduce more structure, more meetings, and consider hiring support staff. Currently, they have very senior people performing administrative tasks because they don't have a secretary. While this approach is noble in the beginning, at some point, they should hire a secretary. It's about value. It's costly to have highly paid individuals doing tasks that could be handled by someone else. This is part of the ethos of a growing company. As they mature, they'll likely understand this. They do pay their staff well, but are slow to hire because they're cautious about costs. However, sometimes it's not about the cost of the person, but the value they bring. Focusing solely on cost control is one thing, but investing in people can yield returns. Those are my main observations.
Is there anything we haven't discussed that you think is important for us to consider or research, especially for those interested in understanding the company and considering a long-term investment?
I think we've covered it. Just keep an eye on the multiple of EBITDA to market cap. It's pretty high. At one point, it was ridiculously high, but it has decreased. A lot depends on how the new products are received.
What would you consider the most influential source to see what influencers are saying, or the best place to look?
I don't really know. There are metrics in the annual report. Typically, every time there's a product launch, even a minor one or an accessory, there's often a spike in sales. Keeping up with product launches is crucial, as is signing new big corporate customers.
Is there a competitor that people should consider or look at to see what they're doing?
No, not really. That's another reason it took me a while to understand what they were doing. They're essentially focused on single-source computing, which not many others are doing. It's beneficial for those learning to code, but the commercial application is limited. There aren't many competitors, but they're trying to grow that market. They're competing against nothing and everything at the same time.